Lauren, Billy, Daniel O'Brien, two best friends and comedy writers. If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here. I think you'll have a great time here.
So, hello again and welcome to the first video podcast episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers give each other questions and give each other answers. I'm flying blind without my notes, even though I've said the same thing for 6 years on this show. I am one half of this podcast, senior writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, author of How to Fight Presidents, and guy who is increasingly getting sweaty for being on camera for the first time in a long time, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello!
Hello. It just occurred to me with horror that at the end of this, I don't know how to end it because I don't remember any of the things that I'm supposed to say. I'm not sure that just like off the top of my head, I could say what your Twitter handle is.
No. And we've got so many different things. Like, we have Twitter, Instagram, and an email address for the show. And there's no consistency on QQ with Soren and Daniel, Soren and Dan. They're all...
And you'd think by this point I'd said it so many times I would remember it. But no, I've not committed that to memory. It just falls right off every single time.
But we're doing a new thing right now. We're doing a video podcast. It's the dramatic return of one half of the After Hours table on camera.
Yeah. And actually, it's nice. I guess this is fine. But it's nice to see you in person.
It's nice to see you too. Yeah, it's good to look at you. I think it's going to keep me really honest and focused on this podcast to not have
not just feel like
my video games on the computer while I'm checked out. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh good, no, Soren's telling a story about the mall right now, so I can let's check out Reddit for a while.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Well, time will tell, I guess.
Yeah.
We should do maybe like a do 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 strike update.
Do 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 strike update.
I don't have any. I just want to make sure that you don't either.
Okay, no, yeah, I don't have any strike updates. I really wanted to, a big part of me being out here in Los Angeles, which is where we're filming this, for a month, was I was excited to protest with you and march around and strike with you, but this
not happening.
Broken foot.
Yeah, so you'll notice that both Dan and I, you actually get to see this in person, but like, yeah, I have a cast. This is the mm-hmm. cool, sleek cast. Daniel has a very cool, sleek
I got my
Band-Aid
foot
wrapped around his foot.
Yeah, it was bring your child to the hospital day, and someone's kid really wanted to mummify my foot. And I think they did a pretty shit job.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to give them like child credit.
No, so I'm sure at this point you're feeling the pain of like the wrapping itself is now more painful than the actual injury.
100%, yeah.
I had a lot of that. I had these two fingers wrapped, and like, what developed in between them looked permanent. Like it was like, first of all, they got very wet and the skin got very loose in there. Mm-hmm. And then some fluid started to fill in a very specific area in between the knuckles where they just barely rubbed against each other. And I got these like huge gross blisters in there that I couldn't do anything with for a long time until I finally unwrapped the whole thing and like rewrapped it myself, assuming I could do it right. And even now, there's like an edge in here that is fundamentally changing the fingerprint of my whole palm, like the what would be the lines of like, oh, that's your lifeline, like that kind of stuff. That's all altering dramatically because of this injury.
You'll never be able to open your home safe that just uses your handprint ever again.
Oh my God, my guns.
I know.
Oh no. It's really a pain. I mean, for a while I was putting duct tape in here, but that just looked so it was
oh, did it look shiny and unprofessional, Soren? Did you, now before you got the cool removable cast, how long were you in the urgent care splint?
Okay. I was in that for 3 days.
So showering with it.
Yeah. I found that the best thing I could do was take a bread bag, because bread bags are long and thin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the long plastic bread bags. And I would put that on. I'd just slap a rubber band around it and then shower with that. That worked out great.
I'm at an Airbnb now, and none of my stuff is with me. Not that if I broke my foot in Jersey and had to shower with the stuff in my home, it's not like I have one of those special things for that, like I used to have for my wrist, like a medical grade shower protector. Would have, with my items in my house, I would have been able to put together something competent. I'm in an Airbnb that is not really decked out, and I'm going through all the drawers, and it's just, I'm just tying a garbage bag around my foot at this point. I'm just like opening what should be the stuff drawer with like rubber bands, and also my wrapping keeps coming undone. So I'm like, where are your fucking safety pins? What are you, you have so many laundry detergents and no safety pins or rubber bands. Where are your scissors, you maniac?
I mean, you know, if somebody was out in the woods and had to do like something pretty quick, and I saw that, I'd be like, well, we can do better than that.
Yeah.
We'll find something that's better than that.
The guy who did this, I don't think ever wanted to do his job, or maybe just didn't want to have anything to do with me. He like checked me in the beginning, and he performed the x-rays, and he tried to find a boot, but couldn't find a boot, and then made the splint. And every step of the way, it seemed like, what, are you late for a date? You want to catch? Basketball's not on for another 2 hours. Just like, please do this thing that I'm supposed to wear until I go to a different doctor.
I had the same experience. Well, those technicians, man, I think that they have no bedside manner, first of all.
Yeah.
Across the board. I've been to now, because I broke my toe a while ago, and like the technicians are always just like, listen, I don't have to deal with your shit. I'm not a real doctor. Yeah. Like I never had to learn that stuff. And so like when she was wrapping my hand, she like stopped and then went back and she was like, I'm going to do the fingers. And so she did these fingers for no discernible reason other than to hurt me. Because they turned out they were completely unnecessary to be part of the wrap. And when the bone doctor who then took off my wrap to like put this on, as he was taking it out, he was like, who did this? And I was like, yes, I knew it. I knew that she sucked. Like, why is she doing that job? Her job is to just check the x-rays. Then and somebody else who has like, understands human beings, like a nurse or somebody comes in and she's like, oh, this is gonna suck for a while, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Like they're gonna give you like the how it's gonna go, the lay of the land. But that didn't happen. Instead, I just had this one woman who was like basically smoking a cigarette right there, being like, oh, what can I do to this kid? Oh, here we go, I'll wrap this up in this terrible way,
right around his neck a little bit. So what should we talk about?
I want to talk about the game we're playing.
Okay, yeah. It's a game we're playing. We've played it famously twice before. It's called Dangerous Bangers. It's inspired by Kieran Culkin. He invented the game with the cast and crew of Succession. The rules are simpler than
they
sound.
How are they, by the way, since you've been talking to them? Because you got this game from them, right?
It's been such a whirlwind. It's been so
you and Jesse
wild,
haven't
all
really.
The press. Yeah. It's a game that's simpler than it might sound at first. You have to take a movie that you think is great, you think is a banger, but you also haven't seen it in a very long time, and you're not entirely sure if you can trust your memory on this, and you need to present that movie to someone who has never seen it before, and they're going to see it with fresh eyes and in modern times, and you will decide together if it is, in fact, a banger. Last time we did Monster Cops. Soren brought that to me, a movie I'd never seen before.
It's not like Monster Cops.
Monster Squad?
Yeah. Oh, Squad? I thought you were being intentionally demeaning. Okay. Oh, okay. You don't know it.
Okay. Yeah. We determined it was a banger, and I brought Soren French Kiss, and we determined that was a banger.
Absolutely. Loved French Kiss.
And now we're going to start with a movie that I brought Soren.
Yes.
In the same world of French Kiss, of romantic comedies. It's a 2010 James L. Brooks movie called How Do You Know? And it stars Reese Witherspoon, Paul Rudd, Owen Wilson, Jack Nicholson in his final film performance.
Yeah, star-studded cast. And like that's the other thing, is that people just show up out of nowhere who are in the movie for like 5 minutes and are incredible actors.
Tony Shalhoub, Hank from Breaking Bad.
Herc is in it.
That's right. Herc plays a baseball player.
Herc is in it for like a minute. Larry from Perfect Strangers is in it. Mm-hmm. there's like all kinds of people show up where you're just like, oh shit, okay, well this is a new character that's like going to be in this for quite a bit. No, like Hank from Breaking Bad, what's his name?
Dean Norris?
Yeah, Dean Norris is in it as like a baseball coach who's there for literally 30 seconds.
You know what I'm just realizing is going to be very gratifying for me doing this podcast? Answering questions like that,
I know,
and not having a computer in front of me.
Oh, can't fake that. I'm going to be so dependent on you. I'm going to be like, Monk, Dan. And you can just be like, yeah, Tony Shalhoub. So anyway, what do you want first? Do you want to tell everyone what the movie is, or do you want to hear?
I would like you to tell everyone what the movie is. And then,
okay.
Maybe by the, oh, or before that, something that you and our audience should know is I love this movie so much. I haven't rewatched it for this podcast because that's not how it works. And I have tried to show this movie to so many people and they have not liked it in the same level that I have. Not only that, but they don't even understand why I like it. And I can barely articulate why.
My biggest question for you was going to be, what is it you like about this?
Okay, great. Because there are some movies that I can show someone and they're like, it's not for me, but I understand.
Yeah.
If this came at a certain point in your life and like, ooh, lightsabers must have been fun when you were a kid, or Jurassic Park must have been exciting when you were a kid. But I show them How Do You Know? And they're just like, what? It's not like you're a huge baseball fan. You know, it's not.
No, that I think that would actually hurt you if you're a huge baseball fan for this movie. Okay, so How Do You Know is the story of Reese Witherspoon, who is a softball player, famous softball player. She's on a bunch of Olympic teams, and she finally is too old to play softball anymore. She's now 29, I think, or like verging on 30, and I guess in the softball world, that's where the door shuts. As the door shuts, she's also meets two men. And one of them is going through his own crises. He's a business boy. Mm-hmm. I'm not totally sure what his job is, but he's like a business boy. And he's being indicted by the federal government for something.
Yes.
And
he works for his father's business company.
Yes.
His father's Jack Nicholson.
And then the other person that she meets is Owen Wilson. And Owen Wilson is a baseball player. He's a pitcher for the Nationals. And makes a bunch of money. And seems like a really great guy, except he's just kind of a doofus and kind of a womanizer and a little bit of a narcissist.
He's playful golden retriever of a human being.
Yeah.
But she sleeps with him and they borrow a beat that I think is taken from real life Derek Jeter rumors, where he has like gift bags and like matching outfits for the women.
Yeah, the first thing he does, he says the toothbrushes are in that left drawer, and she just opens it up, and it's just this array of toothbrushes because this happens so frequently. And then he's like, you don't have to go home back home in that dress. Like, here's a juicy outfit that you can wear. And it's like, what size are you? And they still have all the stickers on them. Like, it's like you're at the mall. Yeah. And she does not like that. But she does like him because he's so nice. And like his approach to everything is so earnest and honest. And even though he's not like a great guy, like he's trying, he's genuinely trying to be a good person and likes her.
Yeah. He's not, as much as he's like a womanizer and like, as you imagine famous professional baseball players and athletes would be, I don't believe he cheats on her in this movie.
He does. Yeah.
Well,
but he doesn't understand it as cheating. He says that he gave up everything except for anonymous sex, which is like a pretty, that may be a, okay. So there's one good bit in it.
Oh no.
I actually have another one earmarked that I want to bring up because there was a moment in the movie that made me genuinely laugh. But the general premise of the movie is that she doesn't know what to do because she's got these two guys to choose from and her career's over. So it's time to move on to love, I guess. And, one of them offers nothing because he's going to jail soon, has no job prospects, worked for his dad, but is just like the most charming, kind guy in the world who really likes her. And then
Paul Rudd.
Yeah. And then this other guy who's also really likes her, but like, and has all of this stuff, but there's these little elements that aren't working for her. And now she's got to decide. Okay. A lot of good people in this movie. And the movie that I just described, and I was hearing it as I was saying it, I'd watch that. That sounds actually pretty good. This movie is so weirdly paced and the timing is so strange and like everyone's choices in it. I mean, I even like hesitate to call them choices. It feels like everyone's just sort of like, let's just go to the next scene.
Yeah.
He's just moving through the movie in a way that makes it feel like a movie within a movie where like Reese Witherspoon is up for a role in some other movie. And she's like, her character's up for a role, and she's like, and I got the softball role. And now you're going to see bits of that movie throughout the other movie. It feels exactly like one of those,
mm-hmm.
where like they're like, well, why are we bothering to make this look real?
There's Catherine Hahn, Catherine Hahn role, where she plays an employee of Paul Rudd and Jack Nicholson's company. And she's like 8.5 months pregnant or so throughout the entire run of the movie. And at one point she looks like she's going to swat Jack Nicholson, her boss, just like
she can punch
sock him one.
Yeah.
Because he's being rude to his son. and she like has to stop herself, or Paul Rudd stops her, and that seemed like that's from a different movie. That's no longer a human being in this movie of other human beings.
There's a couple of moments where it does feel like an acting class exercise, where like they're like somebody got these sides, and like they're like, well, why are we going to choreograph this? Who cares? Where she's like sitting there thinking about, she's getting mad at him, but we're not clear on like what's going on. The dad is just talking down to Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
We've just met her and she's in the room and she starts doing like this, like she starts getting antsy in her seat while she's watching Jack Nicholson. And then she's like, and it looks like she's like, she wants to fuck him bad. Yeah. Like, it's not clear what's happening at all. Like they are not giving you any indication as to what characters are feeling along the way. They're just like, this person is clocking a thing and they're feeling something. And in a way where it's like, I don't know what's going on anymore. And then she gets up and tries to punch him and Paul Rudd stops her. And it's like, what? Why did she want to hit him? Like, and then you have to backtrack and think about what?
The thing we learn eventually, because we don't know it at this time, is Paul Rudd is being indicted and is probably going to go to jail. And we find out as the movie goes on that Jack Nicholson is responsible for all of the financial crimes and is setting his son, George, up for it.
Yeah.
George is Paul Rudd. And it's just like, you're young. You're going to go to prison for me. I did these things. You're going to take the fall. So in the earlier scene, before we know that, but Catherine Hahn does know it, when Jack Nicholson is berating his son, she is
ready to hit him.
Now her anger makes sense.
Yeah, but you have to go so far into the movie to know any of that.
Yeah, you have to watch the whole movie, everybody.
Okay, I have a couple questions for you about this movie. What do you think, and like, just like off the top of your head, what do you think Jack Nicholson and Paul Rudd's job is? Okay.
Business,
all right. All right.
Business finances.
What?
Business phones? Phones business.
I don't even think that's, I don't think it's phones.
Banks.
It's something that we have no idea. We are never to understand it.
Yeah.
Like they, and I don't think, honestly, I don't think the writers knew. I think that, and that's the same with Softball. This is a movie where they had to give these two jobs and then the jobs had to be pivotal to the story, but they never bothered to learn anything about either of the jobs.
Yeah.
Like the softball in it is rough.
Yeah. That's very much a 2010s. Well, I can't play softball anymore. What am I supposed to do? Marry a baseball player? I don't know. Can you coach? Sounds like you're a pretty good softball player. You could probably stay in that world somehow.
Yeah. The women that are around Hank Schrader, they're like old softball players who are like helping to field the team for the next Olympics. That seems to be a job as well. Like there's lots of jobs you have available to you, but she's like, now I got to go find a man to make me money in a really strange way where everyone's just like, yeah, that's how it works. So yeah, she plays softball, kind of.
Yeah.
There's a couple of scenes in the very beginning when the credits are rolling where you have somebody who looks a little like Reese Witherspoon actually playing baseball. She is not. It's so clear at every single stage that she is not an athlete. Just the way she carries herself and everything. I think, man, bless her heart, that she is trying. And she's like doing, she's kind of like got like an arrogance to her that I think athletes, like specific to athletes. But she just doesn't have it. Like, it's just so clear that this person has never played a single sport. And they were just like, whatever. It doesn't matter. And they're like, and what does Paul Rudd do? It doesn't matter. Business. It doesn't matter. Business. Yeah, it is a child's idea of both of those jobs.
Yeah.
And, but they become so pivotal in the story that you have to kind of like track what they're doing, and that becomes impossible. Like, Paul Rudd's getting in, he's being investigated by the federal government for, some sort of like, not even like wire fraud. Like it's like something like that though. Like mm-hmm. there's a bunch of money missing. And then as like we get the explanation of how that money went missing, that doesn't make sense either. It's like, we get it from Jack Nicholson. He's like, I paid off an Egyptian. And you're like, well, that's a different thing. that's like, cause there's like money that has like been embezzled or like stolen from different sections of their business. But then he's like, what happened? I was in a hotel room and I paid off an Egyptian and that's illegal. And for like something in Egypt. And, mm-hmm. I was like, what? Surely you did more work than this. Like, this is, cannot be the thing.
I mean, I feel like that is just like a vague allusion to Abscam, the corruption scandal in Jersey from years and years ago that was dramatized in American Hustle that I also don't totally understand, but was a real famous thing that did involve a sting operation where money changed hands from one person to... a sheik?
That makes sense. It makes sense if they are trying to use a shorthand that's already happened in the world, yeah, because they do not do any explanation. There's no heavy lifting there. Then just the fucking pacing of this movie sucks out loud. It's so bad.
I almost reached out to you before you started it just to say the pacing at the start of the movie is very strange and bad, and you need to stick with it. And some people, I think, can stick with it, and some people, I think, if you get a bad taste in your mouth right in the beginning, then you're going to have a hard time with that movie.
Yeah.
I think there are, as I try to figure out why I love this movie, there are a couple of obvious superficial things. I like James L. Brooks as a writer so much.
Yeah, so as good as it gets, right?
Yeah.
Newsroom.
Simpsons. Yeah. Network. I he writes in a, like, not in a way that people speak, but in a way that really appeals to, like, my worst impulses as a writer of just, like, I like how smart everyone is. I like that they manage to speak in lines like, you make me want to be a better man, and what if this is as good as it gets? All that kind of stuff. I'm just like, I'm here for
how do you know?
A good, how do you know? I'm here for a good line, and he is one of the best at writing them. So I like that. I famously like a romantic comedy where there's a love triangle and you don't need to necessarily hate the person who's going to lose at the end. Like when, yeah. Owen, because spoilers, by the end of this movie, Paul Rudd is talking to his dad and is like, I really love Reese Witherspoon. And if she doesn't love me, I will go to jail for your crimes. I will do that kindness to you. So like either root for, it's up to you if you want to root for me to make this work with Reese or not. But just know that's what the stakes are. That's going to be my decision, whether or not she loves me. She does inevitably choose Paul Rudd. We don't know if they're going to get married, but it's just like, this is the one that I want right now. This is the thing that makes sense. And when Owen Wilson loses, you feel a little bit bad about that. Yeah. I'm glad that there's not a scene where Owen Wilson is like a huge asshole to Paul Rudd. It's not Wedding Crashers where Bradley Cooper openly cheats the day before his wedding and punches Owen Wilson out. It's not one of those where it's like, we need to give the audience a reason to root for Paul Rudd. No, we're going to root for him because he's Paul Rudd and his face is closer to Reese's face on the poster. And so that's what we're going to do. And I like a slightly more balanced and realistic love triangle than that, where she is really like weighing decent options and there are pros and cons to both. And I picked what I think is the better one. And like, Owen, you're going to be fine, but I feel bad for you right now. And I like the reality of that. The other thing I like about this movie, and I think the real reason that I will always, it has more positives than negatives in my balance sheet. There are three really great scenes that I love. I love her scene with Tony Shalhoub, the therapist, in the beginning of the movie, when she's really not sure what to be doing with her life.
Mm-hmm.
And she asks him, like it's her first time in therapy. And she asks a question that I think is such a great question to ask a therapist your very first time. And it's some version of like, in all your years of doing this, is there like a good question that people should be asking? Or
she says,
like, what's the best advice?
Yeah, she says, like, is there something you found that is helpful to people that they should know generally?
Yeah, yeah. It's just, she comes from sports world and she's now out of sports world. She's in therapy because it seems like the move to do. Doesn't really know how to do therapy and comes at it from what feels like a very right-brained athletic mind. I'm just like, give me like a basic, what is a good therapy thing? What should people know? You've done this a lot. What are the stats? And he's like very gently like, that's a really great question. And I like what he says as an answer. Do you remember it?
Yeah. He says, people should find out what they want and how to ask for it.
Yes. And that is a mantra that I've been repeating for a very long time for myself.
Really?
Yeah. Whenever I'm struggling with work or life or anything like that, I will go somewhere physically and mentally and just like write down the things that you want, what you want your life to look like, and then figure out how to ask for it, how to get to it, what steps you need to take next. It's been very helpful for me.
Okay. All right.
Other scenes that I love, Catherine Hahn delivers her baby in this very dramatic, like for movie reasons, she's in the delivery room with the father of the baby, Paul Rudd, Reese Witherspoon and Jack Nicholson. They're all in the delivery
room. First time that Reese Witherspoon and she have met in this movie.
And Paul Rudd is filming the birth, and as the birth is happening, her husband, an actor I've seen before, but whose name I don't really know, but he's so good. In this scene, he falls in, like, he's already in love with her, but he decides to propose marriage to her. I propose to you that we get married. And delivers this really heartfelt proposal, and it's just so moving to me. And then they do a comedy turn at the end of it, where Paul Rudd realizes, I haven't been filming this whole time. We need to do it again. And they do it again, and Reese is like feeding him the lines because she was so moved by his off the cuff speech that it's like really
they're figuring opened out
something
together.
Up in her heart, and they're like playfully reminding each other how this proposal went. And that scene really moved me the first time I saw it. I think that actor is just so surprising and
he's
so
wonderful.
Good in it.
Yeah. So how it happens is that she's already had the baby. They get there. Mm-hmm. Reese Witherspoon meets Catherine
All right, Paul Rudd is not filming the birth. That would be nuts.
Catherine Hahn meets her. And then they're like, they find out, oh, the husband's down the hall. So she gets a phone call. Catherine Hahn gets a phone call in there. First of all, that she was like, had a baby and then called her boss and was like, come look at it. Come look at me. I just had a baby. Like, that's, it's somebody who's never had children before writing a story like that. So she gets a call and she's like, oh, you're down the hall. See you soon. And then hangs up this landline. Because I guess her husband called her from the end of the hall.
Sure.
And so then she's like, oh, he's coming down. And as Paul Rudd turns, he's like, we should go. And then Paul Rudd's dad walks in. And we're like, oh, Paul Rudd's dad is responsible for the baby. And we're meant to believe that briefly.
It's a misdirect.
For no reason. Like, there's nothing, doesn't change the story, doesn't do anything other than, like, then Paul Rudd gets to have a nice laugh with Catherine Hahn about it afterwards. But he comes in with presents. And then the dad comes in. The dad says, film this. I want to do something. Paul Rudd starts filming, and the dad gets down and tries to propose. And this, like, it starts like mealy mouth, but it turns into this very sweet and sincere thing. That scene is so long. I'm glad that you liked it.
Love it.
And that you didn't feel that at all. But it's like, that was the one that felt the most like a bunch of actors got some sides for an acting class, and now they're all going to go together and perform it. And like, they're going to kind of figure it out together. We're just going to watch that process. Like, they're not going to know where they're supposed to be at any particular moment. Like, they're just going to see what feels organic. And so there's a lot of that. There's also a lot of quiet.
Yeah.
Like, this throughout this movie, there is like a little soundtrack that does like some, all the ethereal music you'd expect from a romantic comedy. But there's also scenes that are just dead. Like, there's no music, there's nothing, and then there's long silences between the characters. Sometimes
life is like that.
Yeah, but it's rough in a movie. It's really tough. And when they were like thinking of how to redo the proposal, we go through every step of the proposal again, which is like a really tough thing to do in a movie where you just see something happen and then you see some people shittily recreate the thing that just happened.
It's cool.
It's not.
The third scene I loved, do you remember, I mean, you saw this last night. You finished this movie like 6 hours ago.
Yeah.
Do you remember the, I think it's Play-Doh scene?
Yes, that's very good. That's very much an as good as it gets at James L. Brooks, like at his height. Like, it's very poignant. But it's also like, it still feels kind of natural when the actors are saying it. Nothing else did. The actors did not mean a single thing they said in this in this movie. Everybody was just like, listening to Reese Witherspoon talk about how much she loves softball was the funniest thing in the world and how much it meant to her. And like, she's checking a website every day. It's the way that she's going to find out if she's on the team or not is there's a U.S. softball team website and it says team not available. And then one day team available and she gets to click on it and she gets to look down the list. And that's a really tough scene because you've got to do an insert of a list of people. You barely know the name of your own character and know that she's not on that list. And so they're like, how do we do this? And so what they've done is there's at the bottom of the screen, there's a little asterisk and it says new player. And then the asterisk appears next to one of the player's names and starts blinking to be like, this is the new player. This is the slot she was supposed to have. And then we like kind of zoom in on that. And you're like, okay, that's a lot of work to figure out. She could have just gotten a call. Like, it would have been very easy to be like, I'm so sorry you didn't make the team.
It would have been easy for James L. Brooks to call someone and say, like, hey, how do you tell someone when they don't make a team? But instead, he locked himself in a room and was like, how would I do it? What makes the most sense to me? Yeah. I'm firing my Reese Witherspoon. All right, James, you're the only one in the world.
And now, do you remember how the movie starts? Do you have any memory of, like, the cold open of it?
The cold open is not her getting hit with a baseball, right?
No.
Okay.
That happens when she first meets Paul Rudd over the phone.
Right.
The very beginning of the movie has no dialogue, and it is a maybe like 6 or 7 minute scene where we watch a boy who's maybe 6 or 7 trying to hit a ball off of a tee and hitting the tee over and over again. And like a lot. Like we get to see him pick it back up, put it back on, hit the tee again, and the ball doesn't go anywhere, and he's getting mad and frustrated. But like a kid does it, an actor kid who's just going, and then he puts down the bat.
Screams to the sky.
Yeah. A little blonde girl comes and picks up the bat, puts the ball on the tee, and we're led to believe she belts one, like, I don't know, into the sun, because we don't see any of that. We get like she's a child who clearly doesn't know how to swing a bat. So like, they're like shooting in a lot of different ways to like cheat the fact that this ball wouldn't go anywhere. And we hear the crack of this bat. And then this boy walks over to her after she does it and pushes her down into the dirt. This helps the story not at all. Not in the tiniest bit. There's just like this weird cold open that's like this holdout that James L. Brooks, I'm sure, was like, as he was writing it, was like, oh, this would be a fun way into softball. But it's so not useful in any way.
It's so much more useful if the movie continued to be about softball. Yeah. But then she's cut from the team.
Yeah.
In a flash forward years later.
It's amazing.
It does set up a movie where, hey, there's this woman who's really great, a natural athlete. She's really great at softball. Hey, she shouldn't trust guys. Guys are bad. And that movie doesn't happen.
No. And like, yeah, she has to like force her way up through the field in softball, or that she, in some way, like she doesn't get on the team, but like, because she's so good and her tenacity, like she gets back on it, like something like that. That's the beginning of that movie.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with any of that. Also, there's a point in the movie where one of her friends who was this old softball, or she has a bunch of like young softball players, friends. And they're like, she's telling them what happens. I know what happens to players after they quit. They panic. They immediately latch onto a guy, and then that becomes their life. And I don't want to be that. That's what the movie ends up being anyway. She's like painted into that corner, and she's like, no, 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 it is what I want. I am going to do exactly that. It's like, okay, all right. Good, letting the dream die. Congratulations.
No, that's just one of the ways the movies can work.
Then do you remember?
Act one character says they want a thing. By the end of the movie, they either get it or they realize they were wrong to want it and they get the different thing.
Yeah, they were wrong to want it. Yeah. It's wrong to want that. Yes.
Act one, man goes up in a tree. Act two, how do I get down from this tree? Act three, never mind, I stay in the tree. It's story structure.
Do you remember Jack Nicholson's last scene?
He finds out that George and Reese are going to end up together and is like briefly good for you and then...
Bummed.
And then bummed and like, all right, let's get the lawyers in here. Is that...
Yeah, so Jack Nicholson and Reese Witherspoon, well, Owen Wilson and Jack Nicholson live in the same building, it turns out. They like have their own penthouses in this building. That's how these two keep running into each other, as because they're both... Paul Rudd's going to visit his dad and Reese Witherspoon's going to visit Owen Wilson and have some sex. And as they're like riding the elevator, that's where they have most of their conversations. But... at a certain point, Paul Rudd goes to his dad and is like, hey, I'm going to take the fall for you. But if there's literally anything going on in my life, like if I can actually talk to this girl and it sounds like we're going to get together, then I'm not going to take the fall anymore. And his dad's like, okay, yeah, good luck. And like Jack Nicholson is like doing his hardest. Like he's doing a really good job of showing you like he's kind of rooting for his son, but also please, I will go to jail for the rest of my life if this happens. I'll go to prison.
I'll die in prison.
Yeah, I'll die there. And
interesting fact, don't know if it's fun though. Jack Nicholson was a late addition to the movie. It was supposed to be Bill Murray.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fascinating. Okay. No, yeah, I'd have to think about that. But yeah, Jack Nicholson is like, okay, good luck, and doesn't try to stop his son, but like is very manipulative throughout the rest of the movie. And it would be nice in that moment if he was either like, I'm not going to manipulate, or he was like, I'm going to like do one little thing to try and turn the tides here.
Yeah.
Doesn't do any of that. Then his son goes upstairs at this party, goes and talks to Reese Witherspoon in front of Owen Wilson, and then comes back downstairs and waits for her. And she eventually does come down, but Jack Nicholson is out on his balcony. He sees his son down there waiting. He sees her come out, and he's like, ah, she came out to see him. And he's like, ah, well, that's the end of my life, and I will be, I will now live a life of violence and just sadness, and goes back into his penthouse. And that's the last we check in on him. And also Paul Rudd's plan was like, because he would do like 3 years, but for some reason his dad would do a life sentence because he's a second offender. And we're following Paul Rudd through that story. He's just like, he's clueless to the fact like, hey, if like I have anything going on, like I'm not going to do it. And how, what that would mean for his dad. And then he just fucks his dad, like fucks his dad over. And his dad is...
His dad was going to fuck him over. And he found love. Yeah, he and did. It's not like, I don't even necessarily know if it's Reese Witherspoon is going to run away and get married with Paul Rudd at this point. But I do think it's just like, it's almost The Graduate where they're like, we made it together. We're happy. We think we love each other.
Yeah.
Let's see.
They do
what
get
happens.
On a bus.
But the Jack Nicholson stuff, they really should have like text on screen. Jack Nicholson's character died in prison. And then after that, this was also Jack Nicholson's last movie that he did as a favor to James L. Brooks. That's the end of his career now.
So anyway, it was a very bad movie. And one that I usually go to bed each night, like around 11. I was up till 1:20 watching this movie and being like, why am I doing this? Why am I watching this movie? Like, I don't even think Dan likes this. This is like this is a joke. This is a bit.
I really like it. I really like it so much. I'm curious if anyone out there also likes it. Because so far, it's just me.
Yeah. You're
in the anecdotal evidence that I've collected.
You would have to ask Reese Witherspoon, but I think I would say you're batting a zero. I don't actually know how ratings work.
I'll ask Dean Norris. It's a sports question.
Yeah. All right.
So, well, things aren't declared bangers unless it's unanimous. So I think we've got our first non-banger in this series.
I'm fine with that. This was a good one to throw at me because it had no chance.
I think it's important to turn to those every once in a while.
Yeah.
But that's got to be enough for this show. Thank you so much for watching this episode. If you are listening on your podcast app, check out the video. It's fun. You can see our faces. You can see how I never know what to do with my hands. And we are on YouTube at QQ Podcast. You can also find the show at... You can find me on Twitter at DOB_INC. You can find Soren on Twitter at Soren_LTD.
That's right.
You can email the show at qq.with.soren.and.daniel@gmail.com. We are also on Twitter. Our theme song is done by the fantastic Mirex. You can find them at mirex.bandcamp. And we also have a Patreon.
You got to support our Patreon now because we don't have jobs anymore.
Yeah, we're totally jobless. So Patreon.
It'll be great.
/QuickQuestion or just like Google Patreon, Quick Question, Soren and Daniel, and you'll find it. We are, the only thing I remember for sure is that our engineer has a website called GabeHarder.com and there's jack shit on it.
Yeah.
And that's the only one that I'm confident about.
All right.
Subscribe to our channel and click that stupid YouTube bell to turn on notifications.
God. Yeah, I forget those. All those.
I know.
All right, smash that bell. All right, bye.
Bye. Soren, Billy, Daniel, O'Brien. Two best friends and comedy writers. If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time, yeah. I think you'll have a great time.